The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to a UAB Director's Chair. Very special edition here. Mark Ingram, of course, the left-hand side of the screen. I'm Tony Curry on our YouTube channel, wherever you get your podcasts. More importantly, wherever you listen to your favorite radio station, TKR. You can listen to the show at least five times, and you may want to listen to this show five times. You were in Fort Worth last week. Gee, I wonder where you are this week, Mark.
We are in beautiful Spokane, Washington.
Yeah, baby, yeah!
Yeah, which really is a really pretty place. I've been to Oregon a couple of times. I've never been to Washington. And, you know, people talk about how rainy it is in Washington. Well, there's a mountain range in the middle of the state, and we're on the eastern side, so it doesn't get the rain that we kind of hear about in Seattle, which is on the other side of the state, the western side of the state. So it's gorgeous here. There's a beautiful river running through downtown Spokane, and it's really pretty.
So, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people kind of felt like UAB obviously had a shot. We've seen this basketball team. We kind of called them the cardiac kids early in the season. It seemed like they couldn't win an easy one. They couldn't lose a hard one. And you're sitting there going, okay, what are we looking at? Then they had a couple of really weird games. The first Memphis game was great. First FAU game was fantastic. Then, of course, the second half against Memphis, and you're like, okay, what do we got here? And you just don't want to see your team playing like that. You don't want to see a team get beat by 40 in the second half late in the season. They're supposed to have it together, right? And you know, and I think a lot of people look at those teams that get hot, you know, at this time of the season, and a lot of that has to do with guard play. Would you say that's the same? I think I'm starting to see Eric Gaines. I'm starting to see some leadership out of him, and I think that goes along with their success.
Well, he's been really unselfish. I mean, he's got a ton of assists. I think he leads the American Conference in assists.
You are correct.
And Axel Lindeborg leads the conference in rebounds. He actually set an American Conference rebounding record during the tournament, most rebounds in a season. Mm-hmm. And he set the UAB record for most double-doubles in a season.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so, you know, you got some guys playing at a high level. And, you know, it's not unlike some other sports. I mean, think about football. You go, hey, man, if we can just not turn the ball over and play our game, we got a real good shot. And that's basketball is the same way. It's just easier to turn it over, right?
Yeah.
And Eric has done a much better job, I think, here in the second half of the season. And I agree with you, has managed the game a lot better and played within himself. And it's not that he's not shooting. There was a game or two where he didn't shoot or he didn't score. I can't remember. And we need him to score. Yep. You know, we don't want him to not shoot the ball. And he had a great tournament in Fort Worth. And, you know, those guys are just hoping to carry that momentum now here to the NCAA tournament. We play San Diego State tomorrow, which will be 12:30, 12:45 mm-hmm. Central time. And, San Diego State, who went to the national championship finals last year, and they were in the game. They're really, really good again. And they've got one of their players was picked yesterday, second team All-American. I mean, they're really physical. They're real tough. They've got a post player that's, you know, real muscular, thick guy and really bullies his way around. So it's a different type of game for us. And
he's a big fella.
I think the same is always true.
Yeah.
Don't turn the ball over and play our game. We got a good shot of winning.
Yeah, and I hated it for Temple because, I mean, they've got some lineage there, man. They've got some equity in the bank when it comes to college football with the John Chaney days. And just, I mean, for a team to set a record in the AAC and win four games in 4 days and still not have anything really to show for it. And this, we're talking about a basketball team that lost 10 games in a row early in the season. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, that's why, you know, I did the show with Kiefer and Curry a couple of days ago, and we were speaking about you. And I said, I think that's why college basketball, maybe my favorite postseason of all postseasons of major sports, Major League Baseball, NHL, because you got two shots. I mean, you can go into a conference tournament at 11-16 or 11-17 and win. And we've had that happen three times, 3, 11, and 18 teams. 19 teams, by the way, all time have made it into March Madness with a 500 or lower record. And three teams at 11-18 got in 95, 96, and 98. And it's just what a wonderful opportunity to see these teams like a Temple really get a shot. And no, listen, we had a crappy season. Did we learn something from the season? And for them to put it all together and at least make it to a championship game in the AAC spoke a lot about what they've been doing.
Yeah, I mean, credit to them, man. I mean, you got to play 5 games in 5 days, which NC State beat North Carolina the other day. It's like the first time in the history of their tournament. And that's what Temple was trying to do to us the very next day. And it's just hard, man. It's just really hard. And I think we have the better team, and we outplayed them, but that's really hard. And I tell you, the thing that most impressed me with Temple is that those kids played hard right to the end of that game. Yep. I mean, you know, we were up 26 points, and they cut that lead to 12 with about 3.5 minutes to play. And I want to say at about that moment, they fouled Butta Johnson, and he makes a couple free throws, which pushed it back to either maybe they cut it to 13, but anyway, moved us back to 14 or 15. He made both of his shots, and that was those two shots were really important in that moment.
Yeah,
because we were sort of slowing things down, trying to really burn the clock out, and then they were sprinting to the other end to make a layup or get fouled, which stopped the clock and put them at the line. And so that was how they sort of ate into the, you know, we played most of the second half with about a 20-ish point lead, 18 to 22 point lead. And then we got to that, there was a moment there in the last 5 minutes where they would sprint to one end and make a layup or get fouled trying to make a layup. And they cut into that lead. And then we might burn 20, 25 seconds off, but then miss a shot. And then they'd sprint to the other end.
Yeah.
And so that was a key. Those two free throws were key. And Christian Coleman had an awesome game too. And he was really active around the basket. Yaxel Lindeborg, double-double again. But we made shots. You know, that's the key, man. You got to play good defense. Andy's always going to play tough defense. Active hands create steals. Eric Gaines, I think, also leads the American Conference in steals. It's funny, everybody wants to talk about FAU and Memphis and some of these guys, but the UAB Blazers, man, don't count us out. These guys they're not ready to stop playing.
Doesn't it feel good, though, too? I mean, to come into a conference, you know, your first year and just kind of come in and bully yourself through. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you've had teams that have been there forever, and I know some are leaving, but to go into a conference your first year and to push your chest out a little bit and show them who the boss is, come and listen. I mean, you had Cincinnati. You've gotten to some of these teams that have gone to Final Fours and stuff, but here come the Blazers and win the tournament. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Hey, look, man, Andy Kennedy, I'm going to brag on our coach a little bit.
Please.
3 straight tournament championship finals. He's won 2 of those 3, which is really hard to do and really impressive. He has won 101 games in 4 years, 101 in his 4 years with us. That is awesome.
That is the most games in a 4-year stretch for the UAB program. And I was sitting there telling my son, who's 19 years old, about the Gene Parto days. And listen, I mean, I know this, but it was a long time ago. It really is impressive when you talk about the Gene Parto years and everything he's done with this program, and you can feel the ghost of him every time you go down there to Parto Arena. For God's sakes, his name is on the arena. But what Andy Kennedy's done in 4 years with UAB basketball, as long as that program's been around, is really, really impressive. It really is.
Yeah, it is. And it's hard to do, man. Look, I don't care what school you're at. I don't care, you know, what your team looks like. Somebody rolls their ankle, somebody gets the flu, like, you know, you just have life happens, you know, and for him to be able to keep weathering through all of that. And what impresses me about the job Andy's doing is he's had so many different players every single year that he's here because of the transfer portal, guys transferring out, transferring in, and just, you know, graduating, matriculating out naturally. And he still finds a way. I mean, he's got 9 new players on this team from last year's team. Last year's team had 9 new players from the previous year's team. And he'll probably be something like that next year. You know, who knows what it'll be. So it's just a remarkable job of him being able to pull these guys together. But I do think, and you were talking about this earlier, about the front half of the season. And Andy and I were talking about this yesterday. I hope he took it as a compliment. I was trying to give him a compliment. Is we don't play as well at the beginning of the season. And to me, it's because all those new guys come in. And basketball is a sport where, like, you just got to know, like, I just got to play with you for a while before I know what your tendencies
Absolutely.
Are, your strengths are. And I know that if I'm the guard and I'm bringing the ball up and I penetrate the lane, over time, I realized that Tony Curry, if I lob it up, Tony's there for alley-oop, or I, mm-hmm. or Tony's on the wing, and I know you're going to be there because you know me and I know you. And it just you can't just coach it.
Yeah.
You know, it just happens. And so to me, there's a lot to do with that in addition to Andy's instruction, but it's also just time, right? And they, you know, by about, you know, the end of January, they really start clicking.
Can you talk a little bit about if Andy Kennedy hadn't played basketball at UAB, I would doubt that he'd be the head coach there. And a lot of people go, duh. But I mean, UAB is a good job. And certainly Andy's been at different areas, Ole Miss, but up in the Midwest and Cincinnati, he's been in some different areas. And so obviously he's got some lineage and some equity going in his resume as well. And then I'm thinking to myself, you know, he had an opportunity. We talked about the West Virginia job opening up, you know, towards the end of the season. And obviously he is a guy who's won an average of 25 games a year, the last 4 years at UAB. Just talk about, I don't want to say how lucky it is, because I mean, he went to UAB and he obviously loves that, but talk about his relationship he has with that university.
Yeah. I mean, he does love it, and he loves Birmingham and his two daughters that are now out of college, but they live and work in Birmingham. And so he's, you know, he's got a lot of old friends from school that are still here. And I mean, his, you know, his college roommates live in Birmingham, and he made obviously a lot of good friends in Oxford. He was there for a long time. You're just going to, but I think you know, it's kind of like Ray Watts. You know, Ray Watts is from Birmingham. He went to UAB. He treats the university like it's his home because it is.
Yeah.
You know, he picks the flowers out in the flower beds just like you do. And people think that's funny, but the reason he does it is because it's his home. And there's a lot of that in Andy, you know, that he wants what's best for us. He wants what's best for UAB beyond the fact that it helps him win games. He really wants things to move forward and, you know, to make progress and be everything that he thinks it can be. So we're alike in that. And that's not an easy thing to find in a coach. Most coaches are just trying to win games and that's their job. So that's not a knock on them. But when you can get somebody like Andy who went to school here and spent a lot of time here, there's an unmatched passion that he has for it, for sure.
UAB Director's Chair, we do it every single week right here on the TKR app. And of course, wherever you get your favorite podcasts, we're available on every major industry right here on our YouTube channel as well. UAB wins if ... Fill in the answer.
Oh, the game tomorrow? Mm-hmm. San Diego State has a fantastic player who, like I said earlier, is picked second team All-American. We got to control that guy. We can't let him, you know, have a career day sort of thing. And then we got to execute on offense and not turn the ball over. But it's certainly a game that we can win. This is not a situation where we look at it and we go, oh, my gosh, you know, what are we going to do? We can't match up with that guy. And they got eight guys that are better than our eight guys. It's something like that.
And that's one thing I really love about mm-hmm. basketball more so than any other sport, because you it is 5-on-5. You can take down each individual relationship and look at who you're playing against, whether it's man-to-man or zone. And it is matchups. I mean, you can go matchup by matchup. You can switch. You can turn. You can do all those flips. You can do all those things. But it really is, if you have a good matchup, then you have a great opportunity at winning that particular ball game. And I have to ask you too, because it's funny, because obviously you got this team on the other side, the Auburn Tigers playing Yale. And of course, if they win, you got a UAB Auburn matchup, which would be a lot of fun, because Auburn just had a hell of a season too.
They did. They really did. And Bruce is an old friend of mine. And, so it's funny to see all the Auburn and Alabama fans out here in Spokane. You know, I joke with everybody and say we should have just jet pooled out here from, you know, Birmingham or something. And we could have all, you know, probably taken the same plane or something. And kind of hilarious the way this has all gone. And of course, Samford's in Salt Lake City. So, you know, four teams from Alabama are all out here on the West Coast. And whatever, you know, they were the news, the local news yesterday was wandering around downtown and asking people. I guess we stand out. I don't know. They're walking up to Blazer fans and Alabama and Auburn fans. And I think they could just tell, you know, you're not from here, are you?
Yeah.
You know, they put a microphone in your face and why are you here? And who are you cheering for? You know? And I don't know. Maybe they heard us open our mouths and they could like, yeah, that guy, you know,
but he's not from here. Yeah.
All these people. And you know, you see people you recognize.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wait a minute. I think I've seen you. Do I go to church with you? You know, there's a lot of that.
For your top eight teams who have to travel the most, coming from the state of Alabama, Auburn, UAB, and of course, Samford out in Salt Lake City. Yeah, so it's just been crazy that all four of those teams from our state have to go all the way out west to play some hoops, but that's okay.
Yeah, I haven't looked ahead at this to be certain, but I believe that the winner of the Auburn and hopefully UAB game, I believe the winner has to go to Boston.
Yeah,
I believe.
I think so.
So think of that. You go from Alabama out to Washington, well, back to Alabama and then back to Boston. You know, some people get lucky and they have a short hour and a half or two drive to to their location. That is not the case this year for us.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny too, because we watch the playing games and I love those playing games. I love the fact they've been in Dayton, Ohio, which is right up the street from, I know where your wife was born, where I lived for a long time. But I just think it's great that it stayed there for a long period of time. I don't want everyone to see that change. But the people are always going to sit there and say, you know, did the committee get it right? Did the committee get it right? I don't really care because I don't think there's any right or wrong. I think they do the best they possibly can. A lot of people are saying, should have Virginia have gotten in? You know, because Lenardi had them out and of course they make it in and then they lay a big egg there in the tournament. And it's like, listen, this is a team that's won a national title. They play incredible defense. Yeah. They lost six games by double digits this year, but it's still Virginia. They've got some lineage too. They got some, you know, they got some moxie and I can't help but think to ourselves, we're human beings, right? And would we rather see McNeese State or Virginia in the tournament? I want to see the big dogs. I want to see those great basketball teams play. Yeah. Do you not agree there?
I do not.
Okay.
I think that, I agree with everything you said about Virginia, about their history and lineage, but the fact that they won the national title 5 years ago or whatever has nothing to do with this year's team. And I think you're right in that the committee as human beings, it's a really hard job. Somebody's always going to be right there. Somebody's going to be on the bubble, you know, and not get in. And so that's really hard about it. But I think as human beings, the mistake that they make is saying, oh, but they have been good before. They've got all this history.
Yep.
Hey man, that's not fair to my team who had a better season and is a better team. You know, I want to see the best teams in it. And I'm a proponent of doubling the field. I wish we'd go to 128 teams in the field and eliminate the NIT. That'd be my personal preference. It's only one more game. You know, when you say double the field, that sounds like what? When? What? It's one game. It's the equivalent to the play-in.
Yep.
The people that go to Dayton for the play-in, they're playing one more game. So you could eliminate the play-in concept and have 128 in the tournament play and everybody plays one more game and that's it. And you're immediately to 64 after one game. I think that it would be more inclusive. It would be more representative of the basketball, you know, community. It's still only a third. Think of that. It's still only a third of the teams that can possibly get in. There's 360 Division I basketball teams. So you still have to qualify. It's not like everybody gets in, you know, this idea that that's too many. I think it's crazy.
Yeah.
And I think it's unfair to our coaches to, coaches are predicated, their success is completely predicated on did they or did they not get to the NCAA tournament? And if they did, how many times and how many games did they win and all that? And it's really hard to get to the tournament from a non-autonomy league. These, what's now the P4, they get these average teams in every year that get beat up like Virginia did. They get in because, you know, they're barely 500 in their league. They finish seventh or something in their league. And then they go play somebody like, you know, Colorado State or UAB and they get beat if they're not on their game. And there's too many teams. I'll say this. Florida Atlantic, UAB, Charlotte, Memphis, South Florida, SMU. There's at least six of us that could all make runs in this NCAA tournament if we were all in it.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought something up because you just reminded me of something. Rick Pitino, who, of course, ironically enough, was actually booted off the tournament for the St. John's Red Storm by something his son actually did the night before, which I thought was kind of funny. They kind of broke the bubble for his dad's team. They don't go in and they decide they're not going to play in the NIT. And evidently there are three or four teams that decided they weren't going to play in the NIT this year. And that obviously is a slap in the face to the National Invitation Tournament. It just is. Whether you, and now Rick came out and said something, well, you know, we're going to use this time to do this, this, and that, and it's going to be taking time away. And I always thought to myself, anytime you could extend your season, it's better for your program, right? Because you're allowed through the NCAA to get those extra practice hours and blah, 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 blah. Can you explain to me just a little bit what in the hell's going on there? Was it a slap in the face? Tell me what the kids are thinking about.
I don't like it. And fortunately, Andy and I are like-minded here. It's an opportunity for those kids to play more basketball. Most of these kids are not going to play professional basketball. If they do, it's almost always somewhere in Europe. And that's a great thing too, that an opportunity to go travel the world and while you're playing basketball, while you're still young and you can. But a lot of the guys that are starting won't get that opportunity either. I mean, it's not just like everybody can go do that. You know, it's not an automatic. So you're just taking opportunities to perform and play your game. And if you are a kid that's trying to play professionally, the more games you play, the more opportunities you have to play against other good teams and show how good you are, tells the professional teams, you know, what kind of player you are. Like, oh man, Tony got matched up against this person in the NIT. They were, you know, a good team. And look at what he did. He scored this many points or had this many rebounds or blah, this many blocks or whatever. And so I think you're taking something away from the players, in my personal opinion. The reason that some of the Power Four, and I could see Coach Pitino from his, you know, his historical, you know, his career in places like Kentucky and Louisville, the mistake that they make, that they don't like the NIT, they think it's meaningless, and it's because, again, the SEC, I don't know how many they got into the NCAA tournament. Well, they get in six teams probably or something. And so – so it's like their seventh or eighth place team that gets into the NIT. Well, the seventh or eighth place team that got into the NIT was barely 500.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I think that's the one qualifier is you have to be at least a 500 team. Well, they didn't have a good year. You know, they're not excited about playing, right? So that's why they kind of feel the way that they feel. Conversely, South Florida, our regular season champion, is going to the NIT because, again, I think the human bias keeps them out, even though they're a really good team. And they didn't have a very strong strength of schedule in their non-conference. They, you know, remember, they were picked preseason 11th in our league. Mm-hmm. So they did not schedule hard games because they weren't sure what they were going to have. They turned out to make a great run, right? But we got to win our regular season. You have to be the regular season champion in Sun Belt, Conference USA, MAC, Mountain West, and the American. We that's who goes to the NIT. Mm-hmm. And we're sometimes hoping we can get two into the NIT. You know, can we get two in? Mm-hmm. It's crazy. And so, again, this human element, this natural bias towards the Power Four leagues is silly. You know, somebody the other day, about a week ago, talked about there's too many automatic qualifiers getting in to the NCAA tournament. Yeah. And I'm thinking, why?
Yeah.
Because you guys don't want to get beat?
Yeah.
Is that the problem? You guys get upset?
No, let it go.
I think the Cinderellas are the most fun part. You know, UAB right now, Samford, the St. Peter's Peacocks, right? Maryland, Baltimore County, Loyola, Chicago.
Absolutely love it.
And hey, look, man,
Grambling State wins their first game ever. I mean, that is great news. Yeah.
It's awesome, right? And know this. Villanova, who has now won the national title twice in the last decade or whatever it is, they're Samford. Mm-hmm. I used to live 4 miles from their campus. I'm telling you, it would be like if Samford wins the national title. Yeah. And so if you take out all these automatic qualifiers or these small market teams or low budget teams or whatever, Villanova doesn't win that.
Yeah.
They don't get in.
Would you say that in classic rock, if we had March Madness in classic rock, that John Mellencamp would be? What would John Mellencamp be in all of classic rock? Is he a Sweet 16? Is he an Elite Eight? Is he just happy to be in the field of 64? Where do you put John Mellencamp at?
He's got a million hits.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mellencamp.
He's not a Final Four, though. He's not a Final Four. He's not elite. Mm-hmm. He's not elite eight in Mark Ingram's list of classic rockers. He's not in your top eight, is he? Is he Sweet 16?
He might be. He's on the bubble.
All right. So a couple nights ago, he's 72 years old. He's back on the road again. He's coming to the BJCC, as a matter of fact, a little bit later on in April. And we need to go to that show, by the way.
He's going to sing a little ditty about Jack and
Diamond. Oh, yes, I am. Dribble off those Bobby Brooks. And I'm sitting there watching his clip of someone that sent me something. And there's this guy in the crowd about eight songs into it. And he starts heckling him. And first of all, I don't like hecklers. I hate hecklers. Okay. Yeah, it just ruins it for the rest of us. And it's just like, it's usually some drunk dude. It's like, evidently Mellencamp got angry enough that he stopped in the middle of a song and said, I'll leave right now. And he cussed him out. He called him a word that starts with a C, and it wasn't that word. And then he basically said, you know, I'll get up and blow this thing up right now. I'll just get up and walk out. I'll leave. And of course, it disrupted the concert. It ended the show. And a lot of people are giving him a hard time because they feel like, first of all, this guy wasn't really heckling that. You're talking about John Mellencamp and a million amps of sound on one side. And then just one little guy's eight rows up, ruining his entire night. And you're like, you know, is it this old man get off my lawn moment for John Mellencamp? Your thoughts on that? And have you ever been to a show? Most of the shows I go to are loud enough that it's not one person can disrupt. Now, I've been to a comedy club show where I've seen it happen, but I've never been to a classic rock show where one dude can ruin an entire night, not a rock show.
No, and you know, Axl Rose got into a fight with a guy. I remember he jumped into the crowd over something that a guy was doing, and Sebastian Bach from Skid Row, he did it a couple of times. So it's hard to imagine what they could be doing that these guys could even hear it. I'm with you, or be distracted by it.
Yeah.
But the noise and the lights and everything that they're, and the, I don't know, you know, choreography is not the right word, but you know what I mean? Like they're conscious of their body movement and what they're doing, and they're, you know, they're dancing or moving with the music, and they're strutting over to the guitarist and being with him, and strutting over to the bass player, you know, that kind of thing, playing to the crowd. It's hard to imagine what somebody could do to disrupt that. I've never seen that live. I'm like you, I've seen it in a comedy club.
Yeah.
I think the disrespectful part from all of us as fans is not appreciating how hard it is to stand up on that stage and then perform and be judged, whether it's your voice, your humor, your material, your look, your what you're wearing, the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, all eyes are on you and focused on you and just judging the heck out of you. And so don't just assume that they're not a little nervous all the time. I mean, how long has it been since Mellencamp was on stage? I mean, he might be a little nervous about getting back up there, man. It's been a long time. People are going to say, I look old. You know, who knows what's going through his mind, you know? So I did not heckle, but I was working at Temple, and Daryl Hall and John Oates are Temple grads. And John Oates did this. It was the coolest thing. He did this private little show for about 80 people in the downstairs. There was like this small theater kind of room, super cool on their campus. And it was just him and a guitar.
Wow.
And he had played a couple of songs, and we were sitting at tables, like think comedy club, sort of, is the look. And I was pretty close to the guy. And at some point he's talking between songs, and he says, yeah, and I mean, I don't know how much time we've got here, but, and I just blurted out. I said, 5 more hours is all you got, John. Nothing more than five. 5 hours tops. That's what I said. 5 hours tops, John. That's all you got. Thankfully, he left.
Yeah.
I have later thought, God, what if he got really mad or something?
No, well, I mean, that's that's complimentary. I mean, you're asking him to stay for 5 hours. That's complimentary. I just, I'll be the first one to tell you that if I've ever been around, and this goes for ball games too, if someone around me is getting on my nerves or getting around the nerves of it, and I've certainly seen it at ball games, it ain't going to take long for me to say something.
I do that with language. If I if I got somebody whose language is really terrible, I've turned around to people and go, "Hey, man, I got my kids here."
Yeah, I've certainly done that. Now, if they're just loud, obnoxious, and they don't use any language, I let them go. As long as they're not dropping in words and they're just obnoxious, they're just really obnoxious. But it's hard to be really obnoxious and not drop some verbiage in most cases. Yeah. But I've seen that too. So I'm just like, let them go, because the louder the fan, the better. But yeah, if you're spending $150-$200 to go to a John Mellencamp show and you're going to ruin it for yourself,
I'd be mad. And that might be why John Mellencamp did that. You know, he got the fans around that guy to shut that guy up.
Yeah.
Probably.
Hey, last time we had you on, I told you to bring home a winner and you did it. Can you do it again?
I'm going to do my best, man.
All right. Take care of business and go Blazers. And best of luck to you. We'll look forward to catching up with you next week.
Thank you, pal.
Thank you, bro.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.